Welcome to the Construction Brothers Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Campbell, and with me, like he is every week, my brother, Eddie Campbell.
What's up, Tyler?
Not much, Eddie. Well, this week, gripes for architects. Well, Eddie, you've got a bunch of bandages all over you, and I'm just wondering, did you have a fight with a wood chipper? Like, what happened?
No wood chipper was involved in the making of these boo-boos. Let's say feeling like a kid, you know, going out and having some fun with my 14-year-old. Mm-hmm. Thinking I could do the things he did, and then maybe a little more.
Okay.
Happened?
Tell the story.
Garrett brought in a longboard. This is a kind of long-form skateboard. For those of you who don't know what that is, Tyler took it home and refinished it. It looks very nice. New grip tape.
Did really well with
nice
it.
Nice wood finish. Yeah. Well done. And so, being the benevolent uncle that he is, he gave that to my 14-year-old son, who brought it home and started riding it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I looked out and saw him riding it and thought, I want to ride that. So I went out and started riding it. And I tried it on a small hill. And I did the small hill really well.
Did you do it standing? I think you said you did it standing.
Yeah, of course. Yes. Yeah. So I went down the hill, like kind of in front of our house, which is, you know, moderate grade. I can get up a little speed. I probably look like I'm crawling, but when you're up on the board, it felt fast to me.
You know?
So, and then I would bail directly before the big hill. But, I made it down the small hill a few times, and being a red-blooded American man, I decided it's time to try a bigger hill. I did what anybody would do, really.
I could do a bigger hill.
I can get that bigger hill. We have another hill that is...
Yeah, that one's pretty steep.
It's sizable.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a very long hill.
It's really steep on the front end.
It's very steep.
It's very steep on the front end, and it just like, it looks like it smooths out kind of towards the bottom. Almost smooths out.
Yeah, and that's what I was seeing, that feathering. I was like, I'll come out of this.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
You know, and it'll be good. But to just kind of hedge my bets, I'll ride on my butt. You know, I'm just going to go down like the bobsled style.
I feel like that was your first mistake.
That was a mistake. Dude, you have no idea how quickly, well, maybe you do, got about a quarter of the way down. I was using my feet to kind of, you know, keep the...
As one does.
Keep the speed from building up too fast, and then the trucks on the skateboard, they started wobbling, kind of shimmying and shaking, and then I got a little nervous, and then I bailed. And I bailed by putting my left arm and hand down onto the pavement, which
is your only option if you're sitting on the board.
At taking all of the skin off of your hand. And then I performed the nicest paratrooper roll you have ever seen out of that wreck, and then just popped up cackling. My wife told me not to. Jay, my 14-year-old, told me not to. Like, it was like everybody was like, don't do it. And I went, you know, I got that crazy
look.
I'm a
grown man. I can do what I want.
That's
when you hurt yourself.
Well, I was willing to take on the consequences. So the road rash to me was worth it for the fun had.
Mm-hmm.
I might even do it again just for the fun. But I'm going to let my hand heal a little more.
Yeah.
Because there's no more skin on the hand to take that kind of impact right now. I'm going to have to give it a little bit of time to heal. So,
oh my gosh.
Big boo-boos, big bandages. And Neosporin has been my friend all week.
Oh my gosh. It's amazing. Yeah. And those kind of scrapes, man, those things burn. Those hurt.
First night shower was not fun.
Yeah.
You know, washing the hands, not fun. Well, any contact with any liquid at all, not fun.
Yeah.
And you know, all the times I've told my kids, like, no, the peroxide, that's not the one that hurts real bad.
No,
it is. Alcohol hurts. The peroxide, it just bubbles. It just fizzes. I put the peroxide on. Man, that's a bunch of malarkey. I can't say that with a straight face anymore. That hurt.
It was funny. Ellie, our daughter, she has a little sore on the bottom of her toe from some flip-flops she was wearing. And so we've been trying to put some hydrogen peroxide on it too to clean it out. And the other day, you know, Sam's got like the cotton ball out and she's like dabbing the sore to clean it before we put the Band-Aid back on.
Yeah.
And Ellie's freaking out. And Sam's like, I don't understand. Like, it's hydrogen peroxide. This stuff doesn't hurt. And I'm like, No, it totally does. Like, if you get a big enough, like, it's a certain type.
Yeah.
I think. Like, it's the scrapes.
Yeah.
Those really hurt the worst.
Yeah. Not so much the little boo-boos. It's the big boo-boos.
It's the big boo-boos, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Appreciate the use of the word boo-boo. Yeah, so I've had a couple falls too, so I can't really say too much, but I did laugh a lot at your expense.
Yeah, well, I see a scab on your elbow right now too.
Actually,
there, bud.
I've got a couple scabs. So number one was when I was over at your house giving Jeremiah the longboard.
Yes.
I'm like rolling around and like, looking all cool. I'm that cool uncle, you know? It's like, oh man, he's a cool uncle. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. You know, Jeremiah's looking at me like, man, he's great.
Oh yeah.
I'm so proud of him. Like, you know, and then I turn around to come back up that slight hill that you went down first and I fall on my butt. Like the board goes out from under my left leg and I just go down on my elbow. And I did the same thing though. It's like you stand up and you kind of, you're just laughing. You're just like, man, I'm an idiot. But my pride was a little bit shattered at that. And then the next one, I've got a scrape on my knee and one over here on my left elbow. And I was actually skating around here downtown, and our sidewalks here in Milledgeville
are this story.
Terrible, terrible sidewalks, like inch and a half lips between, you know, little pads.
Older town, the trees get underneath and kind of lift the sidewalk bit.
Well, in a lot of them, they've kind of like ground down to be more even.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of them. Not all of them.
No, not all of them.
Not all of them. So I'm going around the block, you know, just trying to get out and clear my head a little bit this week. And I hit one of those lips. And the board stopped completely. And I kept going. And I ended up face planting and like skidding to a halt, like right in front of an office where a friend of ours works, Tina.
Right. Yeah.
And then I'm just laying out there in the grass, just staring at the blue sky, just wondering what happened.
And who saw?
I just imagine Tina just sitting in there like, what the heck? What just happened? Is he okay?
Who's that idiot out there?
Who's that idiot?
Oh, wait, I know that idiot.
That's just Tyler. So yeah, I stand back up. I've got like just dust all over my left leg. I look like I've just been in the war. And like, I come back. I didn't tell you this. I come back inside and I'm like kind of trying to clean off. And I was walking around for a little bit and I reached back up in my hair to just kind of scratch. And then I realized I still had like pine needles and stuff still just stuck in my hair. So I'd been walking around like that for the better part of an hour. Nobody had told me.
Nobody would. It just lets you do your thing.
It's like, what's going on there? Okay, I'll just leave that alone.
Well, and Dad was over the night that you were giving all these lessons at our house.
Yeah.
Right? So we've got three generations of Campbell men. So young man Jay, you know, 14, he's out there. He's all young and athletic, not going to get bruised up too much, and nobody's going to make fun of him too bad if he does. And then,
yeah,
you know, you,
the big oaf,
far past your prime.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate it.
Trying to relive your glory days.
What glory days?
but Dad's role was to stand there and watch with a disapproving look
and
on his face.
Just shake his head.
Just disapproving look. Just
Mom was very upset too. Mom was just like, I came back up and I showed her my elbow where I was bleeding. She was like, oh no, what did you do? I'm like, I fell. It's like, ah, these were the days.
Yeah.
Well, you come back with a scrape, Mom would fawn over you and Dad would just look at you like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
You know,
curiously, that is the exact thing that still happened the other night. So
it hasn't changed.
Some things don't change.
Well, we actually got something pretty fun for you this week. We got a message on Instagram from The Obsessed Architect, and he asked, I think it would be a great topic to go over some of your biggest gripes with architects. Things they do to make your job more challenging, things they do well, and things they do poorly in your experience. The topic isn't meant to be negative, but informative. And I'm sure there are many things I could do better on my end to make sure the whole process of getting something built is easier and smoother for everybody involved. But if I'm not aware of the problem, I can't fix it. So this is something that you and I have talked about a few times. We wanted to go and cover some gripes for different people, you know, maybe some engineers, et cetera, things like that. But that negativity, we don't want it to be negative. We want it to be informative. So if we get negative, you know, just, you know, forgive us. We're trying to keep this as positive as possible and try to keep it to the point. And, you know, this is meant to be a learning thing for everybody who is an architect or anybody who's not an architect or is training to be an architect, you name it. We would love to also hear some of your thoughts on the matter. So if you guys have anything that you would want us to talk about some more or even come back to and revisit this topic, we actually have a texting number now that you can hit up. So you can text us at 478-221-7009. And I'll throw that in the show notes so you can hit us up. And it's actually us. You can actually talk to us. All right. So getting to the topic. Eddie, do you have any gripes that you could bring to us that might kick us off here?
Well, all right. Top of list is a gripe about coordination.
Okay.
So when we get a set of architectural documents, many times there will be phrases like contractor to coordinate. And the difficulty with that statement is that it trickles down. And the intention, I think, is that like you're looking at a set of docs and you see contractor to coordinate and you would think, all right, general contractor, right? Well, that's what the sub's thinking, mm-hmm. that the general contractor is going to coordinate. And yeah. So that might work out on some jobs, some occasions, some circumstances. But then a lot of times the general contractor is looking downstream at the subs going, that's the sub's job. You're a contractor too.
Yeah.
And so it ends up being a kind of a game of back and forth. And I think that an architect doing this, it feels like I don't have what I need to gather the information to explain how this is going to work. So I'll put contractor to coordinate and I'll end up, you know, kind of passing the buck to somebody else, which is a negative way of saying it, but it really is. It's kind of passing the buck. Like it's saying, I'm going to draw a line in the sand. This isn't my job.
Yeah.
The difficulty with that is you haven't really conveyed whose job it is. And though you say contractor to coordinate, and it would kind of naturally fall down on the general contractor, I don't know that the architects always get out of this clean. And I think that that might be not a gripe to an architect, but a gripe from an architect is that all the RFI that come back, sometimes those RFI really gum up the system. And in bad cases, RFI can cause architects to lose money. I mean, that is a whole portion of the contract and the project. So I don't think that this is a necessarily productive statement. I think that staying away from blanket sweep statements that don't assign whose job something is would be a good path, right?
Yeah.
If you say contractor to coordinate, maybe say MEP contractor to coordinate or MEP subcontractor to coordinate or
be a little more specific.
Be a little more specific with it or, you know, I'm just looking for clear lines of who has what.
Yeah.
And I do understand that general contractors have the job of coordinating and trying to bring all of the trades together. I get it. I totally get it. But this can create scope gap. This can create confusion over whose job something is. And it slows a project down because we don't know how to get the information to move forward. And that for us has been the main stopping point or tripping hazard in projects is just not having the information to do our job. We're very good at our job. We can move through our job, but I can't do that if I don't know what your intent is. Mm-hmm. Clearly define your intent and tell me what I have to do to find this information if you don't have it.
Yeah, it ends up in a kind of a pointing match. You know, everybody's pointing at the other party saying, well, you're supposed to and you're supposed to. So you can help your general contractor out by just assigning a task really to a sub. You know, like you said, that MEP contractor just saying, I'm going to put the ball in your court. Talk to your general contractor and make sure everything's right. And I'm here if you need me. Try to push them in that direction. Help them organize their project. And it's a simple statement too. It doesn't need to be that much more text on your page.
Well, okay. So let's hit the majors. Like here, major offenders.
Okay.
And I think the architects that are listening to this they're going to let out kind of a collective groan as well. Cause yeah. Those do stink to try to coordinate. Elevators.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Curtain wall systems, mechanical units on a roof. Those are three that really cause a lot of pain and headache. The recommendation, so that we're not just bringing problems, we're bringing
some
maybe
solutions.
A solution, as well, would be to, I mean, I know we're all fighting for fee. That seems to be kind of the deal in that world. Like we're fighting to try to win the job for a fee. And if we harbor too much responsibility, then we can't keep our fees low. But go ahead and do the diligence and do the availability research, do the cost analysis, and try to help your owner understand the value you're bringing to the process, how you're giving them more. Mm-hmm. And I think that you can get paid for being a little better at what you do.
Well, I think a great example of that is one of the fabricators that we've come across. I saw one of their proposals by accident one time. And I was wondering like how they got the job. The general contractor didn't do a good job of sorting their information. So they let all of their proposals out into the world. Yep. And so I was able to actually, I'd just kind of fallen into them one day just to see what everybody's bid was on the project. And the winner of the project was not the lowest. It wasn't the highest, but it was the most specific.
Yeah, it was the thorough guy.
It was the thorough guy. It was the person that knew the job the most. And, you know, we ended up working with that person on the job. And man, they had their head wrapped around it really well. So yes, I think you can command more fee if you're putting in those specifics. You know, you can say, no, I've really got my head in this job. And here are the reasons why you need me to be on it. You're not the person that's vague. You're the person that knows what's happening.
Well, and a lot of confidence. Times, those three, elevators, mechanical units, and curtain walls, reason they cause issues is because we don't want to commit to a vendor.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, and so we figure, well, if I commit to the one, then the low sub is going to want to use a different one.
Right.
You know, if I commit to train units or something like that, they're going to want to use something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I commit to this curtain wall system, they want to use that one. If I commit to this, you know, elevator, they're going to want to use that one. But doing that cost analysis up front would enable you to go ahead and specify and say, I want this.
Yeah.
This is what I want. Bid that thing.
Mm-hmm.
What that should draw out if you've got a good crowd of bidders is that the people that can provide that well will be the low bidders and they'll be able to provide that service kind of on par with what you expect. Because honestly, like we're looking to meet expectations with the rounds of bidding we go through, right? No significant cost overruns. And one thing that can cause significant cost overrun is a lack of information that leads to RFI and change order.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and those change orders, I'm sure a lot of you know, those things can rack up.
A kissing cousin to this is see structural drawings. And what this tends to do, like when the structural drawings say see arc and the architectural drawings say see struct, a lot of times that means they haven't really talked or coordinated because they don't know what's there.
Have you ever seen the person that's like, oh, it's this way, and they cross both arms and point in both directions?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it feels like when you run into this stuff.
Yep.
And I think it's a result of the engineer and the architect Maybe it's the architect in some cases, not looking at the engineer's drawings for a very long time and kind of studying them like they should. And this stuff ends up kind of falling through the cracks.
For an architect that has consultants working underneath them or working with them, I should say, I would say it is your job to make sure that you've managed your consultants well enough to know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see documentation where it's obvious that the different designers have mashed their Revit models up. And it's like, yeah, they're all occupying the same space. But I mean, there are times that things do not make sense at all. And it's obvious the drawings weren't reviewed before they were let go.
Mm-hmm.
They were let go too quick. Their QCQA process just didn't happen.
Yeah.
And then these C structural drawings, C arc, C, you know, contractor coordinate, all of these just kind of like arbitrary notes that really kind of leave you open-ended. They put that burden down on somebody else. Mm-hmm. And when somebody else has to do that thing, they're going to find a way to charge for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and it is kind of a running joke around the office that C arc on a set of structural drawings is almost like the structural engineer, like pointing a finger at the architect and going like, I couldn't find it. Why don't you try?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's almost like kind of a joke, like
flicking the nose.
Yeah. A flip in the nose. Yeah. C arc. It isn't there is mm-hmm. what that means. I couldn't find it. Therefore you won't be able to either.
Yeah.
You'll understand why I don't have this information when I put C-ARC on here.
I think it's worth saying too, and often we've run into this with some other, like there's a very specific project that we'll work on that we never get a four construction set of drawings because they're so quick. They're trying to push it down everybody's throat and get them to move. So in a lot of cases, I feel like the architects don't have a chance to really finish their job.
Oh, fair. Well, so we're one of the upfront trades too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the structural elements of the job are the mm-hmm. things that you got to lean into. You got to get all of that stuff there.
Yeah. And so I think there's a little bit of understanding that we can kind of reach an olive branch out there and be like, listen, we get it.
Yeah,
you know, everybody's coming at you and saying we need it yesterday. So here's some of these things, and hopefully some of these things can spark some ideas to make some of these issues go away or make it a little easier on the people downstream. One of mine is not getting your dimensions right. Using nominal dimensions versus actual dimensions.
Yep.
CMU, or concrete block, is a great example of this.
Right. You mean it's not 8 inches, Tyler?
It's not 8 inches. It's 7 5/8.
Okay. The next thing you're going to tell me is that a 2x4 is not 2x4.
It's not. So some of these materials that you're specifying, you're not actually using the real dimensions. Be aware of that. You know, and I don't know if they're going to teach you this in architecture school, but you know, you'll learn this if you get out in the field, is that this stuff is not the real dimensions. It's a funny thing that happens. So pay attention to some of those things. This can be really annoying and it can cause a lot of busts in your layout when these dimensions aren't correct. If you're using an 8-inch, that means you're 3/8 off of what is actually going on there. Think about that. That's going to be an issue.
Yeah. Well, here's another one. When you're dimensioning things, don't just go with a nominal. So use the 7 5/8 instead of the 8-inch for a block wall, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then when you do that, tie those dimensions back to a grid line. Don't just run.
Oh my! Yes.
Don't run a string of dimensions that never tie back to a grid line. The grid lines are the control mm-hmm. that we use to lay things out, you know, structurally. But then, I mean, your walls inside, the layout of those inside, those are the things that are controlling on that site. So I would really press for, hey, tie dimensions back to grid lines. They will help the guys that are doing the layout.
Kind of a mental thing, a little thing that I use when we're detailing structure, and especially on e-drawings or even shop drawings, is I always make sure that I have horizontal dimensions and vertical dimensions. right? Now for an architecture drawing, you want to make sure that you're tying a vertical dimension to a grid line or a horizontal dimension to a grid line. So you're dimensioning across and up to grid lines. If you've got a, let's say a shaft where you've got some stairs, that's a great example because that just kind of falls on sometimes on the exterior and the interior. It kind of bumps out. It can be a little odd. Just make sure you're dimensioning across and up and always put a dimension to your grid line if you can. And even if it could shift, just go ahead and put it there. And you might even throw a note and say, this could change, be aware, but for now, this is where it sits.
You know, on the grid line thing, make sure that you coordinate them.
Oh my, yes.
Architects, please, when you set a grid up, make sure you coordinate them. And when you dimension grids, don't dimension half of a grid on one side of your sheet and the other half of the grid on the other side of the sheet.
Oh, please don't do that. Please don't do that anymore. Oh my gosh.
Because when you do that, now I'm having to do addition. So if you take the grids that are pertinent to the left side of the job and dimension up that side, the dimensions that are pertinent to the grids that are closer to the right side of the job and you dimension up that side, but you never quite tie the two together. Well, guess what? I can't close the grid.
Yeah.
And so make sure that you are giving dimensions that will allow me to easily close the grid for layout.
That, yeah, I would say 99% of the grid busts that we run into is where they're doing that, where they've got grids on either side of the building and they never meet the two in the middle or give us something to tie them in. So it can even be one grid crossing all the way over to just give yourself just a baseline, give yourself a control point to dimension from.
Well, and work points. If you're going to put something that has a radius in, make sure you define the work point.
Yes.
Make sure that you define angular dimensions in plan when you have angled grids or things like that.
Yeah.
And make sure, this is going to sound just ridiculously simple, but make sure that your grid and your consultant's grids agree.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I'm telling you, this happens way more than we all want to admit.
This can be as simple as, you know, exporting a DXF out or, you know, just sharing files back and forth. This can be a 2D check. This
doesn't have to be 3D. Yes.
This is very easy. You just need to share files, put them together, overlay them, and look at them and check.
And the point being, like, yeah, we don't feel like we're unearthing anything like real significant groundbreaking with the statement. What we're telling you is that going through hundreds of sets of design documentation a year from, you know, a lot of different designers and consultants, we can tell you that the thing that you think is normal probably isn't because the other people have their normal.
And that goes for everybody.
But also that we see many examples where people don't talk.
Oh my gosh.
The consultants don't talk. And as a result, the busts happen. The grids are different. Just like the simple things.
Yeah.
Get the simple things and make sure you're talking.
All too often, you know, we'll see this in fabricators. We'll see this in GCs, you know, and they'll be, this is the way we do it because this is the right way, you know, and I'm sorry, you're going to stub your toe. Like it may not be the right way. So be humble. And always be looking at it.
Learn.
And one thing that a lot of people don't understand is, we as detailers, as structural detailers, we see 100 drawings, you know, 100 sets of drawings a year. We're building from these sets, trying to make everything work.
And there's a lot of different normal out there.
There is a lot of different normal out there.
And there's a lot of weirdness too, but there's a lot of different
normal. When we run into problems is when we ask for something and somebody says, well, I've always done it that way, and you get pompous about it.
Yeah.
Don't be pompous. And I understand some people will come after you. Like, some people will, and it's really hard to hold your tongue. But try to take it for what it is and just use that criticism as a, you know, as a place to, you know, get better, to grow.
Yep.
I've got one more before we leave grids.
Oh, you get more grid things?
I've actually got one more before we leave grids.
Let's hear.
Actually use grids.
Yeah.
If this, I mean, this is, this sounds really stupid, I'm sure, to a lot of you, but this happens at least once or twice a year for us.
Where there are no grids.
There are no grids.
Yeah.
On any of the drawings. Oh my goodness. Like, just throw some grids in there. Give us some control points. That's going to help us out so much.
Yep.
Just, you know, and if you don't give grids, dimension the ever-loving crap out of it.
No, but give grids.
But get, yeah, still, just give us some grids, please.
Yeah.
All right, stairs.
Stairs. Did you know that the structural elements, they're usually called channels, that hold up a stair, they're the stringers in a wood stair.
Yeah.
Did you know that those actually have volume? Like, that they have width?
They do, yes.
Many times they don't on architectural drawings.
Yes.
And this is significant because what do we care about architecturally? Path of egress, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. We're trying to create a path of egress that works for the equation we're using for the building.
Yeah.
If you don't take into consideration the fact that my channels or my two bys have a width to them, that's going to mess with your path of egress. If you mm-hmm. don't take into consideration the fact that that channel can't sit inside of the wall.
Yeah.
A lot of people will draw the risers and just, they go all the way over to the wall and mm-hmm. just die right into it. If you got a steel stair, that's not going to happen.
No.
There's a channel next to the wall, and that channel next to the wall is probably 1.5 inches, 2 1/8, or 3, depending on what you're using. And it's going to have to sit with a little gap off of the wall too.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just take and take a dimension right off the inside of the wall and then go to like maybe the inside of the stringer on the inside of the stair. Well, guess what? You don't have the true 4 feet. Your stair corridor is not large enough.
Exactly.
And you got a problem.
Yeah. And all too often we'll put these things in there and we'll get dinged from an architect saying, hey, this isn't wide enough. Yep. And then we go, you don't have a choice, bud. Like that's the way it works.
Your stair corridor will now grow.
Otherwise, yeah. Otherwise,
and here like, comes the ripple.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it ripples out. So it's what you don't actually draw in that will bite you. And a lot of these things are not hard to find. You know, you can look up, you know, structural design on a stair and figure out some basic sizes for channels or stringers if you're designing for steel.
Yep.
That's pretty common, and you can find some details for that.
Oh, and we've covered this before that, you know, the stair thing, stairs a lot of times are three separate efforts by an architect, a structural engineer, and then the stair detailer.
Yeah.
And each one cares about a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the drawings can vary greatly, and trying to marry all of those up without ever having really been in the same room can be kind of difficult. And there's nothing more frustrating being on the shop drawing in than just drawing the whole thing out, sending it in, and then have it shot down after you've got everything done. And then you're costing me days.
Yeah.
You are costing me days while I have a fabricator breathing down my neck that says, I got to have this going. I need it in my shop. I expected these back right away.
Yeah.
Why did these things come back? You know, industry vernacular is so bloody.
Yeah.
Why can't I have them now? And
the GC's pressing on us.
And the GC's pressing on them.
Yeah. GC's pressing on them and they're pressing on us. Or in some cases, the fabricator, they're just trying to fill up their shop slot.
It's a stroke of a pen.
It is.
It's a, no, not that. Mm. And yeah. You know, many times because of having to guess at things.
Yeah. Ooh, I've got another one. Let's hear another one. On rails.
Mm.
Did you know that we use 1¼ inch pipe to meet your 1½ inch OD spec on handrails?
That is true.
Because 1¼ inch pipe is actually closer to 1½ inch.
It's actually over 1½ inch.
It's actually over 1½ inch.
Outside diameter.
Then it is 1½ inch diameter pipe. Look it up.
Yeah.
Look up 1¼ inch schedule 40 pipe versus 1½ inch schedule 40 pipe and look at the outside dimensions and you'll see what I mean. And if you really want to impress a fabricator, a steel sub of any form or fashion, you can say, use 1¼ schedule 40 and you will blow their minds. They will think you're the best.
Yep. Now that's a good one.
Oh yeah.
How about have an idea of what things cost? Right. There's nothing worse than going through a whole design and then going out for pricing and then having the owner say, we can't build that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then maybe a lesser tier of that is just having an owner that's really mad.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens? We're going to strip the building of all of the cool.
Yeah.
Through a VE process that everybody hates.
Yeah. And that building's not going to look at all what you thought it was going to look like.
Right. Have an idea yeah. of the cost of what you're building before you actually get out there and just ask people to verify your cost.
Yeah.
Another one that gets preached a lot, particularly by a lot of trades organizations, is we'll call the trades.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that's not useful. That is useful. But keep in mind that the person that you get on the phone is not always the most experienced person.
It's usually the salesperson.
Well, and okay, so a little anecdote here.
Mm-hmm.
We were having issues with some documentation, some structural documentation back in the day. It's probably been about 14, 15 years ago. And John was working with us at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been yeah. with us a week.
Yeah.
And we had him working through some base plates and we were getting him on a call, you know, it's kind of like a, hey, let's get your feet wet and all that. You need to call somebody and let them know, I don't know what to do with this. I need you to tell me what to do with it. And the person, the structural engineer on the other end of the line, straight up said, well, what would you do? And John's like, I've been here a week.
Yeah.
No idea. And straight up was like, make the base plate bigger. And the engineer said, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Let's go with that. And if the yeah. conversation sounds silly and stupid, it's because it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And just know who you're talking to. Mm-hmm. Know who you're getting information from. Deferring to the experts is not always a great idea unless you actually have an expert.
Yeah, just because they're in the trade doesn't mean that they're an expert.
Verify the expert.
Yeah.
Make sure that when you're going to a subcontractor for help,
mm-hmm.
man, I'm sure they are more than willing to throw their arm around your shoulder and say, yeah, let me help you out. I will tell yeah. you all the ways to design your building. And it will probably go in favor of how they do things.
Yeah, of course.
So maybe take more of a swath and poll of different subcontractors and see how two or three of them do something rather than just cozying up to one.
Well, I've got another one here that was actually done on our Instagram story. It is Brian W. Vu 08, and he's on Instagram. So he said, copying and pasting details that are generic and not site-specific to the project.
Oh, man. Canned details are the bane of our existence.
Yeah, they kind of are.
I hate canned details.
Yeah, yeah.
You know why? Because they only work in one little perfect scenario that never happens.
Yeah.
So you put them on there and they don't represent reality.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what to do.
They're close.
Yeah. Well, and here's the problem with that.
But no cigar.
You go, well, they're close, but no cigar. And yeah. you go, okay, well, yeah, but does it convey intent? Well, yeah, sorta. And that's the problem. Mm-hmm. The sorta is where the change order comes in.
Exactly.
And so, and if you get what, I'll let you in on a little secret. We ran 45 jobs. They were repetitive jobs that we did some early detailing on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we run through all this, and we built them all over the country and encountered all sorts of subs. And there was a name for one type of sub that we had that I came up with. It's called the opportunistic sub. There are subs, and I know you guys know this, that are laying in wait for that canned detail that's going to create airspace for them to go ahead and change order.
Yeah.
There are subs out there that straight up know they will make their profit on a job through change ordering the crap out of it. And that's yeah. why they'll go ahead and take it at a low bid on the front end because they know your documents suck and they're going to exploit that for everything it's worth.
Yeah, they'll see it. They won't say anything.
They're not going to say anything.
And they'll wait.
And, even though your documents say, hey, in good faith, if you see something, you are supposed to inform the architect and the engineer, and you have that written down, everything, go prove that.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. And you go, oh, we didn't see it until now.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's going to cost a lot of money to fix. And now what do we do when we bid and we get the award? At general contractors or subcontractors, we essentially bid to win the rights of becoming a monopoly on the job.
Mm-hmm.
And so who are you going to go to? You're going to go to the person that has the contract and say, how much?
Yeah.
And you're at their mercy for what they're going to charge you.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, let's put a nice little bow on this conversation for everybody. So what are some of our takeaways from this?
I think be a builder.
As we always say.
As we always say. Yeah. Applies as much or more to architects today than it ever has. Architects were the master builders of years gone by. And I think that, I'm really going to enter opinion here. But architecture schools have gotten away from teaching building as a part of architecture and have fallen more into teaching architecture as art.
Yeah.
And as a result of that...
And it can be.
Yeah. But especially though, in architecture that's trying to be art, you have to know how you're going to build a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So just coming up with some junk, pulling the Frank Gehry and wadding up the piece of paper and throwing it down on the table and saying, that's going to be your Disney concert hall.
Yeah.
And people going, oh, whoa. And then making it everybody else's problem to figure it out. No, you do need to go through and learn how to build and know what you're doing, know how the materials work, how they go together, what sizes they are, what they cost. Be a builder.
We will throw a video to an Eric Ryan Holt conversation. Eric was one of our previous guests. And if you haven't listened to that and you're an architect, I highly suggest you go listen to it. But in the video that he did, he was sitting across the table from his engineer and they were sitting there and they were having a conversation.
Mind blower.
Yeah. You can then take this to each sub that you think of, you know, and it doesn't need to be on every job, but over time, you know, sit down with a glass and glazing subcontractor, sit down with the person that runs in all your stud work and does your bricklaying and, you know, puts in your steel and does your roof. Like, talk to these people. They are there. And a lot of them would be tickled to death to be able to tell you what they think. Because I promise you, what we have to say is the tip of the iceberg. This is just from our perspective and some of y'all's perspectives that we, you know, kind of generated a lot of this content. And so, yeah, back to that, you know, be a builder. And part of being a builder is build a relationship, you know, build a relationship with the subs. Go out there and learn from them. They have something to say too.
Good notes, man.
Heck yeah. I hope that we stayed out of the muck on this one and that we didn't really sully any of our reputation or anything like that. But I felt like we tried to stay on task here and bring some valuable stuff y'all's way. So let us know what you think. Again, text us, let us know. We'll actually get these, read these, and we can talk to you guys back. So again, text us at 478-221-7009 for our community number. And we'll just have a conversation. Let us know what you think about this. And we'll catch you in the next one. Go build something awesome this week.